Chapter 2.
Shadows fall down, endless alleyway of fiendish pain where bullets struck, ricochet lows. Innocence don't shield your skin, protect your fragile bones. Single tear drop, gazing into dusk as he looked up and he cried, I feel danger, hear me calling. Be my savior, Lord, hear me calling.
There's an alarm blaring. It whines and wails, high-pitched and frantic, like a panicked, pained bird screaming right in Obi-Wan's ears. His whole body feels like it's been squeezed into one of the smaller caverns in the Melodon sewage system. He barely fit in them back when he was a tiny whelp, so he has certainly outgrown them now. Or perhaps it's like he's been dropped from the cliffs behind Zahava and landed at odd angles into the river below. Because what else can cause this full body ache? Like, every part of him is battered and bruised, while at the same time, something is buzzing underneath his skin. Tries to urge him to move, do something, even if the back of his hurting head tells him his arms would tremble were he to lift them. What could possibly... The crash! His eyes fly open, panic in his chest, and he is immediately overwhelmed by a wave of nausea and dizziness. He closes his eyes, swallows once, twice, until he feels the burn of bile subside. Slowly, then. Slow and steady does it, the nausea staying at bay as he takes deep breaths, breaths that sting something fierce in his chest, like with every movement a vibroknife is mercilessly pressed deeper and deeper into his skin. This time, when his eyes are open, he can take in his surroundings. Or, rather, he can conclude something is most certainly wrong because he is seeing double. Karking Sith spit. He groans, blinking a few times before the two steering sticks swimming in front of his vision merge into one. Around him, the cockpit doesn't look too bad. Everything that wasn't attached has now found a different home, and even some things that were attached have relocated themselves. He reaches out and flicks on the HUD. Something sputters in protest. The HUD flickers ominously and then dies. Well, it's not like he's going to fly himself out of here, so it's no real loss. The only thing that needs to work, really, is the emergency locator beacon. He holds his breath as he presses the button to activate it. The thing might not have a magnificent reach, certainly it won't reach either Naboo or Melodon, but without it, he is doomed for sure. Without so much as a hitch, the beacon activates. He lets out a long, relieved breath that turns into a wince when his chest burns, but at least the beacon works. It's not his only luck. The windows are also still in one piece, surprisingly enough. When he peers out of them, nothing but whiteness looms in front of him. Ice, judging by the way the light of the moon and the red of his blinking emergency light ominously spread over the surface. Of course, he has crashed on an ice planet. It does mean, though, that he should get up, find more layers to wear before the cold creeps in more than it already has, even if he doubts getting up is going to be fun. He releases the safety belt, grits his teeth with a hiss as he needs to shrug it off. Kark. Kark, that hurts, and idly he wonders if he's broken every single one of his ribs, because it sure as fuck feels like it. No matter, he must carry on. He braces himself, counts to five before he pushes himself up and stands. Searing, blinding agony shoots through him. A soundless scream passes Obi-Wan's lips, the pain flashing through his body, his left karking leg, like lightning. Quick, bright, and destructive. His leg trembles, the only warning he gets before it gives out entirely. With a broken cry, Obi-Wan falls to the floor with a dull thud. His ribs, his leg, his head, he doesn't think there is a single inch of his body that doesn't hurt. He lies there, staring blindly at the ceiling with his chest heaving, his heart racing, and tears stinging in his eyes. Alone, in agony, and cold. There is no pain, there is life, he reminds himself. The first time he'd murmured his own desperate addition to the Jedi Code, Neald had tried to patch up a blaster wound on Obi-Wan's shoulder. It had brought him comfort then, the reminder that if he felt pain, he was alive. Now, it's much the same. He should have died, The vulture droids had certainly tried to ensure that, but he didn't. He won't. He doesn't know how long it takes for the pain to subside to a bearable level, but it does. He picks himself up off the floor and slowly hobbles through the narrow corridor to the lounge area, avoiding putting pressure on his wounded leg. Never before has he been this grateful that the ship is so compact. Cockpit at the front, lounge, a bunk bed, and an it-fits-if-you-don't-stick-out-your-elbows-sized fresher in the middle, and the cargo hold at the back. Thankfully, the tiny fresher does have a small medkit, and once he's retrieved that and all the blankets from the bunk, he gratefully sinks down onto the couch in the lounge. He disinfects his hands and gets to work. There is little he can do for his ribs or his head, other than take painkillers and rest, but the wound on his leg needs something. That something being more treatment than he can offer himself, but he supposes slightly less than average wound care is still better than none at all. As he works, he tries to focus on Rowenny's explanations back when she'd given the whole council mandatory first aid lessons. Certainly, her soft cadence and slight Alderaanian accent that she'd picked up getting her medical degree at the university there are a much better thing to focus on than his pain. The sting that seems to go all the way down to his toes when he uncovers and cleans the wound. The burn when he disinfects with what might as well be criffing acid. The throbbing, in tune with the same drum-like feeling in his head when he dresses it. Clean, disinfect, dress. Use Bacta if you have it. Make sure the dressing is sterile. Make sure the dressing is tight enough, but not too tight. Clean, disinfect, dress. There is no pain. There is life. When he's done, he takes double the recommended amount of painkillers, but if that is going to do him in, then so be it. He allows himself to sit for a few minutes, breathing softly and staring off into nothing, trying to keep the panic at bay as the reality of the situation starts to sink in. Crashed on an ice planet. He should check the rest of the ship and then his surroundings. Needs to figure out where he is, if this is a populated planet, and, if yes, if he's managed to crash near a settlement. Needs professional medical help, better equipment to call home, or at least arrange a ride back home. But first, he needs to rest. The Force seems to agree with a content wave of meditate, heal. He, however, is no Jedi. He meditates, yes, tries to still live by the code because one does not need a title to value a way of life. But the reality is, his education stopped when he was 13. He never learned the art of healing meditation. But with the Force insistent, he supposes it doesn't hurt to at least try. He gathers a blanket around his shoulders, takes a deep breath, and closes his eyes. He doesn't feel better when he resurfaces from his meditation. Luckily, though, he also doesn't feel worse. Blanket still around his shoulders, he limps to the cargo bay. At least there is still enough power coming from the generator that the door opens when he presses the button. Unsurprisingly, there's a hole in the back of the ship. A big, gaping hole, through which Obi-Wan can see fuel leaking from the engine. The engine that keeps the heat on, which in turn keeps the cold out. Horrendous cold, which enters through the gaping hole and which now pulls at Obi-Wan's skin. It's like a sharp, burning sensation, digging through his skin and settling into his bones in seconds. The gust of wind that howls through the wrecked cargo bay doesn't feel cold at all. It's almost like it's fire, burning his skin. It is the worst cold Obi-Wan has felt in his life, and it's only been mere seconds. He retreats back to the couch, shivering and numb. It takes him 2 cups of tea, 3 blankets, and a bit over an hour before his skin has stopped feeling like it's on fire, and he feels relatively warm again. At least one question is answered. If he doesn't want to freeze to death, help will need to come to him. He jolts awake, his ribs and head protesting at the action and the constant pain throbbing through his body, flaring like a flash grenade. But it's all second to the panic in his chest and the worry in his mind, because he doesn't remember turning the emergency locator beacon on. "Kark," he curses. "You idiot, how could you forget?" he mumbles to himself, a scowl marring his face. That beacon is his only salvation, his only way off of this planet, and even then, it depends on the will of the Force and sheer dumb luck, more than anything else. It takes him 5 minutes to struggle to the cockpit, his leg screaming murder when he accidentally puts pressure on it. He checks the emergency beacon. It's on. He frowns to himself, scratching his beard as he looks at the green light indicating the beacon is on. A relief and an enigma both. He heaves a sigh and takes a moment to mentally prepare himself before he limps back to the safety of the lounge. With both the doors to the cockpit and the cargo bay closed, it's the only space where a little heat seems to hang in the air. Although, anything can be considered heat compared to the frigid air outside. He shivers, burrowing himself into the pathetic heap of 3 blankets on the couch, wondering still when he turned the beacon on. He doesn't remember doing it. He's lost the engine. The ship's now on its emergency power generator, which means at least the red emergency lighting has died. The only benefit. With the emergency power generator on, the ship's functionalities have been reduced to the bare minimum needed to survive. A single strip of weak fluorescent light for visibility, minimal heating, the emergency beacon, and the oxygen regulation system. For survival in space, it's all very effective. Obi-Wan, however, isn't in space. Drowsy and tired, Obi-Wan settles in to meditate again. He's not skilled enough to improve his situation, but at least he can keep it at bay using both the Force and painkillers. He shivers and tries not to worry. It will only burn energy he can't spare. But when an insistent beep indicates another 10% drain of the generator, and a computerized voice states that there is currently 12 hours of oxygen left, there is still a somewhat hysterical voice in the back of his mind screaming that oxygen isn't the problem. The beacon. Obi-Wan's eyes fly open, his sleep-addled brain struggling to catch up, but somewhere his instincts are screaming. Did he turn on the beacon? Before he can get himself to shrug out of his warm blankets and limp to the cockpit, he is dragged back into sleep. In an hour or two, he will wake again with the same panic in his mind. He's run out of painkillers. Obi-Wan glowers at the empty packet lying on the table in front of him for a few seconds. Although it could be minutes or hours. His sense of time has gone off like too old bantha milk with how much he sleeps and how weird the day cycle on this planet seems to be. With an irritated sigh, he flicks his fingers and the packet flies off the table. It hits the back of the wall of the galley with a soft thud, a frivolous use of the Force and wasting energy he doesn't have. It doesn't even offer him the satisfaction he was hoping for. He is still in pain, a constant throbbing in his head, ribs, and leg. Like his heartbeat is shooting dull tendrils of pain through his whole body and exploding into sharp agony that reaches all the way to his toes when he makes a wrong move. Without painkillers, it is only bound to get worse. He frowns down at the beacon. It's not blinking, even if he just turned it on. Why won't it turn on? How can it be? He racks his brain trying to find an answer, but his mind is sluggish, as if it's been stuffed with Melodon cotton. The only thing that's happened is that the emergency power generator has run out of energy. Oh, Obi-Wan thinks, with a heavy, sinking feeling in his stomach. Oh no. He stares at the beacon. He blinks once, twice, and then the tears come. They slide down his cheeks, warm and desperate, and the hopelessness in his chest becomes a black hole that swallows him. He has no beacon, no light, no heat, and for the first time since he crashed, no hope. He stops shivering. Does that mean he isn't cold anymore? Does it mean he is close to being frozen, like the rest of the planet? That the Force can't sustain him any longer? Has his stay from execution finally come to an end? Kark, he hopes so. Someone is trying to get in. He can hear the scratching and banging at the door separating him from the cargo bay. There are voices as well, but he can't hear what they're saying over the loud beating of his heart and the rush in his ears. Is he being rescued, or is he going to meet his end in an unfortunate turn of events? He reaches for the blaster on the table. He put it there when he first started to bunk down on the couch, a precaution he hoped he wouldn't need. But one never knows what comes crawling out of the cracks of a deserted landscape. He's not a terrible shot, not when he can always tweak the blaster bolt's course just a bit with a nudge of the force, but at this point he's uncertain if he even has enough strength to properly squeeze the trigger. Someone must have stuck a crowbar between the seal that keeps the two sliding doors closed in the middle, because the door cracks and groans loudly, as little by little it is pried open. Obi-Wan raises his blaster with weak hands and prays for the best. In the cracks of the open door, a helmet appears and a flashlight shines into the room.
"This is the Grand Army of the Republic. Is anyone alive in there?"
Relief burns through Obi-Wan so brightly it pushes his pain, cold, and exhaustion to the back of his mind. Someone is here. He has been rescued. "Yes," he says in reply, his voice a soft rasp from disuse. But it seems it is still heard, for the helmet disappears and the same person shouts,
"We found him. He's alive."
He's alive. The blaster falls from Obi-Wan's hands, hitting the ground with a loud thud, and a relieved sob escapes him. "Yes, I am." Light floods the room when the door is pried open. Obi-Wan's still squinting when a figure squeezes himself through the opening.
"Thank Fett's balls,"
the figure, a man, says.
"Kiri, with me. Wooly, get the hypothermia kit ready."
Twin echoes of,
"Yes, sir,"
follow the command. By the time Obi-Wan's eyes have gotten used to the influx of daylight and sunshine now falling into the ship, someone is kneeling in front of him. A soldier, a clone, that removes his helmet and looks at Obi-Wan with sharp eyes. Triumvir Kenobi. Obi-Wan blinks drowsily. He's suddenly very tired. He wonders why the medic is frowning at him. "Ah, yes, that was his name, wasn't it?" He nods. "That's me. I'm Steady, Chief Medical Officer. Me and Corporal Kiri are going to look you over, all right?" Steady asks, his hands hovering at Obi-Wan's sides, while the corporal is moving the table to make space, and another trooper is laying out what looks to be blankets on the floor. The moment Obi-Wan nods, there's hands on him, gentle but insistent, careful yet probing. It's a bit of a blur after that. CMO Steady talks to him throughout the procedure, commentary on what they're checking for, Obi-Wan supposes, but Obi-Wan doesn't care much for massive hemorrhages, airways, and respiration, and he certainly already knew that his ribs were broken and his leg hurt. No, Obi-Wan wants to sleep. He feels drowsy, his whole body heavy with exhaustion, and certainly no one minds if he just closes his eyes for a moment while the medics work. "Hey," a soft voice calls out, "try to stay with us, all right?" "I'm tired," Obi-Wan mumbles, the words feeling slow and sticky in his mouth. He doesn't hear the reply, mind having to sleep already. He does hear Kiri's soft curse, and sluggishly thinks that that can't be good. "Sir, core temperature is 30 Celsius, Kiri says. "Let's move him." Whereas Kiri had sounded worried, Steady's voice is firm and unwavering. "Wooly, how's that kit?" It's a question the medics don't wait on to be answered, carefully helping Obi-Wan to stand even before the full sentence has left Steady's mouth. "It's fine," Obi-Wan argues, as he's trying not to stumble on unsteady legs. "I'm not shivering anymore." "That's not actually a good sign," Steady says, a tad gentler now, as Kiri and him support Obi-Wan the few steps he has to take. They sit him down on some sort of insulated blanket that Wooly's put down, and then wrap another one around his chest. This one's thicker, though, stiffer too, and above all, it's warm. By the time the three troopers are done, Obi-Wan is completely cocooned. He closes his eyes, drowses for a few seconds before panic rises in his mind. "Oh," he says, and turns his head to Kiri. "Can you turn the beacon back on?" At least now he doesn't have to drag himself to the freezing cockpit on that painful leg. Kiri squats down in front of him with a frown. "Beacon, sir?" "The emergency beacon, for the—" Obi-Wan cuts off abruptly, blinking to himself. "Oh, suppose I don't need rescuing now that you're here." There is a moment of silence, and then Steady is squatting in front of him too, a frown on his face. "Get the Mediscan and run a full analysis. I'll start the TBI evaluation." "TBI?" Obi-Wan asks. "Traumatic brain injury," Kiri provides with a kind, patient smile. Obi-Wan frowns in disappointment. "So, no sleeping?" Steady shakes his head with an apologetic smile. "I'm afraid not." His body warms. Somehow, it's worse than the cold. Pins and needles and a burning sensation like his skin is on fire. He's about to comment on it when three other clones stride in. One, obviously a leader, flanked by two others.
Steady,
the leader says.
Can he move?
Unless it's to my medbay, I'd prefer not. The leader sighs and takes off his helmet. Longshot's reported a storm front coming in from the southeast. There's no way to get through it with the LAATs without taking unnecessary risks. I've sent Waxer and Boyle to scout for shelter. When they give word, we have to move out. Steady sighs and pinches the bridge of his nose. Commander, Obi-Wan mumbles to himself and peers at the man, the commander, with slightly narrowed eyes. At first glance, he looks the same as the medics, what with them being clones. But they're all different, from the lines on their face, the scars on their skin, the look in their eyes, and, perhaps most prominently, their presence in the Force. Steady honors his name, feeling like a steady pillar of strength. Kiri feels softer than his CMO, like the kind of person that has endless patience. And then there is the commander, who feels as resilient as an aged tree, with roots that could weather any storm. Who feels like Obi-Wan has known him his whole life. Force, he says with a titter and catching everyone's attention. Next you'll say your name is Cody. The commander raises an eyebrow. It is. Have we met? Obi-Wan blinks. Commander Cody. The commander, Cody, shifts his weight from one leg to the other. He regards Obi-Wan with an impassive expression, giving away absolutely nothing as he crosses his arms in front of his chest and dryly says, "Last I checked." Hyena bombers passing over at too low an altitude. An explosion. People screaming. Zahava destroyed. Smoke in his lungs. Ash in his mouth. Tears in his eyes. Cody, Cody, Cody. There's a hand on his shoulder, comforting and grounding and careful. Triumvir Kenobi, Kiri asks. He nearly chokes on the words, stops abruptly when he feels something, someone, in the Force that can't be real. Achingly familiar and a distant memory both, his eyes snap up to the pried-open doors just in time to see him enter. Older, looking weary and tired, but still very much the same. Master Qui-Gon Jinn. I'm hallucinating, Obi-Wan says. He turns to Steady, who is looking at him with calculating eyes, and repeats, "Something is terribly wrong. I've started hallucinating." Obi-Wan, Jinn says, a confusion and worry to his tone that is as foreign as the presence of the man whom Obi-Wan hasn't seen for 2.5 decades. Obi-Wan laughs, and if it's a bit hysteric, well, that's exactly how he feels. The cold must have gotten into his brain, or maybe something really is terribly wrong inside of his head. The medics never did say anything after their TBI evaluation. General, perhaps it is best you leave, Steady says, carefully diplomatic, but his tone leaving no room for contradiction. It seems, though, that some things haven't changed much over the past 3 decades, as Jin asks, "You are sending me away." All due respect, sir, I don't think your presence is helping. He might be doing better than anticipated, but that doesn't mean anything when we'd anticipated a corpse. Obi-Wan swallows, the words hitting him like a slab of duracrete. They'd been expecting a corpse. He can't blame them, not when he's certain that if he'd been Force Null, he wouldn't have made it. Not when his body still prickles and burns as it's heating up, and, despite the painkillers, he's still in pain. Something about lower dosage due to hypothermia. He survived. He did. He closes his eyes and whispers to himself, "There is no pain, there is life." Obi-Wan remembers the day the war broke out. How a cold shock of recognition had shot through his body when he'd seen a holovid of the battle on Geonosis. He'd known then, without a shadow of a doubt, that the clone troopers were the soldiers from his vision. Cerasi, Neild, and him had decided right then and there that the Gar should be kept as far away from them as possible. War would not come to Melodon again. His only solace is that at least he sits at the back of an icy cave, rather than in a sewer in Melodon. But that doesn't mean Obi-Wan's heart isn't heavy as he watches the two men conversing at the entrance of the cave. Two men he wished he'd never run into, one of a past he left behind, and one of a future he does not want. He finds himself surprised, though, how at ease he feels surrounded by the platoon of clone troopers. But here, huddled as far away from the entrance to the cave as possible, even if they are clad in armor, there is no war. There are no headlines and holovids celebrating our clones in white, while in the same reel they show the destruction of war. Here, however short the moment may be, they are just men. Men that are bored, aside from the two medics constantly at Obi-Wan's side and checking his vitals, and try to pass the time with conversation. Obi-Wan listens with only half an ear, his head still feels like it's stuffed with cotton, and sleep still tugs at him near constantly. He perks up, though, when one of the troopers wistfully says he'd like to explore Naboo. "Naboo is nice," Obi-Wan murmurs. "Was just there." The trooper makes a delighted noise. "Really? That's so lucky." Obi-Wan hums, eyes still closed. They hosted the IRCA summit. A hush falls over the cave, and next to Obi-Wan, Wooly asks, "You were at the IRCA summit? But they're separatists." Obi-Wan blinks his eyes open and looks at Wooly. "They're not," he says with a small shake of his head. "Some of the planets part of the IRCA are in separatist space, but there are also Republic planets, or neutral ones, like Melodon. It's a collaboration of those that only want to help." Someone scoffs. "They help more if they fought to end this criffing war." "I've heard the IRCA achieved some great things," Kiri says next to Obi-Wan, giving a small wave of the Mediscan in his hand and offering Obi-Wan a small smile, especially when it comes to refugee safety and protection. "Or they can let the Republic take care of things," another clone argues. "Why work with the Separatists like traitors?" Obi-Wan frowns. "Traitors, is that what they think of the IRCA? "That's enough," Steady says, before Obi-Wan can defend the IRCA, living up to his promise that any conversation, including Obi-Wan, should be as light as possible. "Switch topic, boys, or the conversation is over." The conversation doesn't pick up again, though, when General Jin approaches the group with his trademark peaceful smile. "I would actually like to ask if I could have a conversation with the Triumvir." Steady makes a "be my guest" gesture to the spot next to Obi-Wan, and the troopers shuffle to the side to make space. Jin leans his head to the side slightly. "In private." As the troopers scatter, someone muttering an "privacy in a tiny cave, what a joke," to get out of the way, Steady gives Jin an unimpressed look. "You get 5 minutes, tops." "Of course," Jin replies serenely. Obi-Wan doesn't sulk when his former master sits down next to him, although he feels annoyed no one bothered to ask if he wanted to have this conversation. "Obi-Wan," Jin starts. Obi-Wan has never heard the other man sound so hesitant and careful. "How are you?" "Better than a few hours ago." Jin sighs, possibly at the lack of an answer. But Obi-Wan isn't going to provide him with one, not when he is so out of his depth. When his body hurts despite the pain medication, when warm is something within reach but hasn't settled in properly yet, when his head feels like it might explode from all the cotton that seems to have been stuffed there. Not when he doesn't owe this man a single thing, for Obi-Wan might have forgiven for his own sanity, but he hasn't forgotten. He takes a deep breath in an attempt to calm himself. Air in, emotions out. His ribs burn. Kark. He can't deal with this right now. "You thought I was a hallucination." Jin sounds surprised and regretful. Obi-Wan scoffs, another sharp flash of pain. Bad idea. "Yes, well, excuse my surprise. I had not expected to see you after over 2 decades of your silence and absence." "You left. I have hypothermia and a concussion," Obi-Wan interrupts, his voice as cold as the indignation rolling through him. "How dare this man?" "Your timing could not be worse, Master Jin." Silence reigns in the cave, the trooper's attention far from subtle, and Steady's glare a warning directed at his general. Jin, at least, looks chastised. That, however, doesn't deter him from saying, "I heard what you said earlier. There is no pain, there is life. You are aware, I'm sure, this is not part of the Jedi Code." Obi-Wan grits his teeth and blindly stares at a random rock. Have to find some solace when a 14-year-old is treating your blaster wound, and no one's seen Bacta in at least a year. A situation that could have been avoided, Jin says, neutral and serene, as if he isn't continuing with the same questioning as before. Obi-Wan closes his eyes, breathes in and out, ignores the pain in his chest and the drumming in his head as he does so. Was the man always so infuriating? Thankfully, Steady saves him from answering. General, I do believe that is 5 minutes. Jin hums questioningly, but doesn't argue, which, honestly, says more about the medic than it does about the Jedi. When Jin leaves, Obi-Wan gives Steady a small, grateful smile. Thank you. You're my patient, Steady says, in lieu of a, you're welcome. A minute later, when the medic is running another analysis on his Mediscan, he softly says, for what it's worth, I think it's a fitting addition to the Jedi Code. Despite his exhaustion, Obi-Wan doesn't sleep much that night. Every time he closes his eyes, he sees the hospital from his vision explode, hears his own screams losing both his city and his heart. Not that being awake is any better, because more often than not, Obi-Wan's gaze finds the Marshal Commander. He watches, and he worries, and he wonders, why was the Gar on Melodon? Why was Zahava under attack? And, unbidden and almost guiltily, he wonders why he loved the other man. Something he shouldn't waste his time on, for the future of his vision is not a possibility anymore. Not with Melodon's distance from the Republic. Not with their adversity to this war. No, Obi-Wan has done all he could to ensure his vision would forever remain just that. If that is at the sacrifice of possibly loving the Marshal Commander sitting at the mouth of the cave, looking at him with distrustful eyes, that is a small price to pay. Obi-Wan doubts he could love a man who he only associates with destruction and pain anyway. By morning, the storm has cleared and Commander Cody gives the order to head to the LAATs. It's only a 20-minute trek over the icy plains to reach the LAATs, and the only one inconvenienced by that is Obi-Wan, which means the overall mood is rather cheerful, and it speaks of some care in the leadership that the troops are allowed to be just that. They're not rowdy or unruly by any means, just a tad lighter in their step, perhaps, and Obi-Wan can feel the lack of tension clearly in the Force. It all goes to shit remarkably fast. Incoming, someone hollers. Hyena bombers incoming. Cover, find cover, the commander barks. It's all the men need, even if it's utter chaos, as they scatter and spread out to rocks, ditches, and anything not flat ice to provide some sort of cover. Obi-Wan is running on adrenaline and instinct, the instinct that crawls its way out of the back of his mind like the young had crawled out of the sewers. Some things never truly go away. Stay low, find cover, grab a fallen blaster when you pass it, and don't look at the face of who you took it from. You might recognize the face. Move, 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 until you're hidden from the Separatists, hidden from the Elders. His back is pressed against a rock, his breathing harsh. His chest aches and aches and aches, just like his trembling leg and his pounding head. But none of that matters. None of that fully registers, as his blood boils under his skin. Panic clings to his mind and sweat prickles at his neck, his armpits, his back, everywhere. An explosion. It's deafening, drowning out the screams, both the ones shouting orders and the ones screaming in anguish. The ground shakes. The rock wall behind Obi-Wan rattles, and pebbles rain down onto him and the troopers next to him. His breath is stuck in his throat, palms sweaty and sticky against the blaster he has yet to fire. Around him, the Force feels hands on his shoulder, shaking him harshly, insistently, until Obi-Wan's teeth rattle in his mouth and the panic clears.
You okay?
A trooper, Longshot, isn't this Longshot, demands. Kark, please be okay. Fine, Obi-Wan grits. Kark, he thinks. Get yourself together. You can do better than be a liability hiding behind a rock. Good. Longshot pats his shoulder. Yeah, good. Longshot. Commander Cody ducks behind a rock with them, a blaster in his hands. Commander, we need you up front. I want as many of these bombers down as possible. Longshot nods at the weapon he's holding, a PLX missile launcher. I have 4 missiles left, sir. Then you better make them count. You two. Cody waves at the other 2 troopers with Obi-Wan. Cover Longshot. I'll protect the Triumvir. You don't have to, Obi-Wan protests, as the other troopers dart forward. Go to your men. Men that, for as far as Obi-Wan can see, are preparing a counterattack from a ditch half covered by a rocky overcrop. The commander shakes his head. No can do, sir. General's orders. Your general is an idiot, Obi-Wan shoots back incredulously. That is a terrible tactical decision. The Force provides, Cody says, faux serene in an almost perfect intimation of General Jin as he rains a string of blaster fire onto a bomber. It doesn't do much harm, but Obi-Wan supposes it's mostly cathartic. He certainly feels like shooting something at this point. The bomber's assault continues, their numbers only thinning out slowly with how few PLX missile launchers they have. A trooper with white armor darts onto the open plains. He's carrying a PLX and aims at the bombers coming in for another attack. One man against three bombers. It's insanity. Trooper, get cover, Cody orders. Too little, too late. Obi-Wan squeezes his eyes shut until the bombers pass. Thumper. Cody vaults over the rock and towards the fallen trooper. He drops to his knees and bends over the other, his worry as clear in his movements as it is in the Force. Thumper reaches out and clutches at Cody's shoulder. He says something, too soft for Obi-Wan to hear. I don't care, kid, come on, Cody replies. Before the commander can do anything, Thumper's body slumps in his hold. Unconscious, not dead, Obi-Wan can still feel the other in the Force. Obi-Wan shudders. Cody curses. A warning screams in the Force. Watch out, Obi-Wan screams, even before he's seen the bomber coming towards them. It's no use. The commander can't outshoot or outrun the bomber. He rolls the ice in an attempt to get out of the way of blaster fire that hits the ice with sharp tack-tack-tacks. He's hit regardless. Kark, 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 Obi-Wan curses. Cody groans, red blood spilling over white ice. He's a sitting duck out there, an easy target and as good as dead if no one does anything. Obi-Wan is closest. He runs so fast he all but skids over the ice. He makes it to the commander and Thumper, to the fallen PLX, but only just. His left leg gives out, forcing him down onto the ground with a gasp. Triumvir, get back, the commander roars. And let you die? I can fight. On the horizon, the bomber makes a 180. You can't even stand. Get back. That's an order. I'm not your trooper, Obi-Wan snips back without looking at the commander. He picks up the PLX, arms shaking as he does, but thanks the Maker for adrenaline. He aims at the hyena bomber coming right at them and pulls the trigger. End of chapter 2.
I'm afraid, hey, night is falling. Don't let me die alone. I feel danger, my breath, my heart, my soul. Lift my breath, my heart, my soul.